Welcome to Mobility Matters. I'm Tyler Reeve, Director of Research and Workforce Development at the Center for International Trade and Transportation. Join me in this episode of Mobility Matters to discuss intelligent transportation systems, or ITS. We'll discuss ways these technologies are transforming how people and goods move through rural, suburban, and urban U.S. communities. And we'll also discuss the exciting related career opportunities associated with these game-changing technologies. It's difficult to pin ITS down to one simple definition because the technologies are changing so rapidly. But it is safe to say that ITS technologies integrate microsensors, cameras, and other advanced communications and data processing technologies into infrastructure and vehicles. This means that in the future, increasingly, we will have what's known as V2I, vehicle-to-infrastructure communication, V2V, vehicle-to-vehicle communication, and generally a more connected, smart series of mobility systems that will move our people and goods in ways that are more efficient, safer, and environmentally friendly. And of course, along the way, creating a whole host of new career opportunities. I'm joined today by three ITS experts, Dr. Stephanie Ivey, who is an associate dean for research and a professor of engineering at the University of Memphis. We're also joined today by Eric Rensel, who is vice president of transportation planning for Gannett Fleming. Also by Kevin Comstock, who serves as the director of intelligent and community innovation for the city of Chattanooga. So let's begin by talking about our unique focuses, what we're going to bring to this conversation. Stephanie, how do you focus on ITS? Where does your interest lie?
Sure. Thanks, Tyler. From my perspective, I'm certainly interested in how do we attract and prepare students for ITS-related careers, but also a lot of the work that I do as far as research, whether it's looking at how do we improve operational efficiencies or it's looking at workforce development and really trying to understand how these innovations and technologies are really changing the way we do work and what that means for the future workforce. Those are really the things that I think about when talking about ITS.
Yeah, I share that and am endlessly thinking about all of the new occupations in the future that we don't even have names for yet. It's a rich area to think about. And talking about workforce development, it makes me think about the very real talent acquisition challenges that we see in this emerging workforce. And Eric, that's good entree, I think, to bring you in. We've talked a lot about how difficult it is to recruit and retain the talent, the young emerging professionals and the incumbent professionals who could contribute to implementing these kinds of technologies.
Yeah, thanks, Tyler, and thanks for having me here today. I agree. You know, early in my career, I was focused on designing ITS elements to be put out on the roadway. As my career has progressed, I've gravitated towards the policy side of things because I really believe that's where the greatest impact can be made. But, you know, in my time now, I agree. One of the things I do on a daily basis is try to inspire other people to find a similar career path and to join me on this journey that I'm on. It might seem like working in the private sector, recruiting is easy, but just like in the public sector, the workforce pool is not out there today. So what you have to do is find somebody, choose them for their soft skills ability, and then train them on how to be a leader in the ITS industry. So talent recruitment is something that I focus on a daily basis as a professional and as a leader in our organization, for sure.
People talk about it, but I don't know that it's to the extent that it should be talked about. And that is, as we develop these new automated connected systems, there's so much focus on the technology. The people part is as important as ever. You know, where do these human and machine systems meet? I mean, that really is the question. And part of that involves finding that old school work ethic, that attitude to work together, teamwork. In all of my workforce research, the consistent thing I hear is a need for these professional competencies. So as we talk about ITS, these kinds of sensibilities are certainly there. And I know that we'll get there later on in our talk today. Kevin, I know that you've seen ITS evolve during your career. If you could share what you saw when you started and what you see now and what you find most interesting.
Thanks, Tyler. I'm happy to be here. The things that I've seen in my career, when I started in the traffic signal transportation business sector as a city employee, a lot of the work that we were doing out there was hardwire installations, electromechanical type traffic signal controllers, and everything was these more clunky machines that dated back into technologies from the 50s and 60s. Over my experience, I've seen the development of the semiconductor industry in our world, the introduction of microcomputing, as well as the transition from much of the analog type of infrastructure that we had out there to this digital environment now, with a key factor being all the connectivity that is involved within those things. The dynamics of the job force and the training that we have to provide our people at the city level has changed dramatically over that time period. And so with the city government, they're not always fast to act on a lot of things. They don't always pay the best people coming out of schools or universities. And there isn't any good programs currently that kind of set a footprint that teach all of these different phases. Many cities still have some of those electromechanical devices out there. So there's this plethora of experience base and legacy technologies right up to the current day things that still have to be addressed at some level in our world. Those challenges are deep.
You could do a lot of workforce gap analysis based upon your 2 minutes right there, Kevin. And it is a balance. You've got legacy systems. There's a need to transition them. Part of transitioning from one legacy to another is having know-how on both sides. So this involves striking a balance across generations and in terms of skills and abilities. Let's get to the heart of what I think is maybe the biggest challenge in getting at the title of this episode, which is choosing ITS. I believe, and I might be oversimplifying things here, that if people generally understood the potential of ITS, if there was a mainstream awareness, we would see a lot more buy-in from municipal leaders looking to solve a lot of long-standing problems with traffic safety, emissions, and other ways to make city government, city infrastructure a whole lot more efficient. These technologies can also improve communities in suburban, exurban, and rural environments just as much. Different implementation, but there's a whole lot there. There are cases where really tragic cases, really heartrending cases where folks who live in different communities across our country are suffering because they don't have access. They can't get where they need to go. Or roadways are a lot more dangerous than they need to be. If I could ask each of you to share regarding ITS, why does this matter? Why is this a meaningful field to delve into as an emerging professional? Maybe share an example. Eric?
I think that a career in ITS is about delivering dreams and the promise for communities we serve. I've been recently involved with a project in New York where the focus was on trying to help a community that really has to deal with some challenges that unfortunately are not unique. Getting access to healthy food and having a reliable, convenient way to get to work. Two very basic things that we take for granted as Americans. ITS plays a crucial role in that. Whether you talk about it in the context of smart communities, whether you talk about it as, the root devices, or whether you talk about it as really linking data together to make better decisions, all of those can comprise what we call ITS. If you really want the opportunity to impact communities that you serve, which all of us do who got into this industry in the first place want to do, then ITS really allows you to do that because you bring together your knowledge of the physical and natural environments. You bring together your expertise you have on building coalitions and facilitating solutions and ultimately make the communities we serve a better place. And I think for me, that brings me back to the root of why I chose a career in transportation in the first place. And I think that resonates with many of my colleagues and peers across the industry.
Yeah, if you look at transportation mobility systems that move people and goods, get people where they need to go, and get families and communities the goods they need, then you're talking literally about the circulatory system of our socioeconomic fabric. And if we have challenges in communities across the country and you need a dynamic way to address them, it seems that this is an area where there could be a lot of agency for change. Stephanie, your thoughts on ITS and how you think focusing on it, choosing it in terms of technological solutions, but also in terms of a career, what resonates most with you?
Well, I think certainly, you know, as Eric was mentioning, the access and equity component, because with ITS, you know, not only from some of the technologies that Eric was touching on, but even from things like big data sets that are now available and just the ability for us to be able to access that information and better understand our transportation systems and how they're being used, you know, at a level that we've never been able to do before. And I think that really opens the door for us to be able to understand where some of those inequities lie, and then to be able to use that data and use that information to start to address those challenges. The other thing, and this was something that really hit home for me this morning in another meeting, because we were talking about the fact that traffic fatalities in Memphis have doubled since 2019. And that's just crazy. There is so much potential with ITS solutions to reduce traffic collisions, you know, to reduce these deaths and injuries and just to improve the safety of our communities. And that's so important. Unfortunately, traffic injuries and traffic death, it's something that as a country, we've been accepting of. You know, we say, well, you're taking a risk, you're getting on the road, but it doesn't have to be that way. And if we are more focused on developing solutions and, you know, from every standpoint, whether we're talking about the need to improve education around it, or we're talking about implementing technologies to actually help address the challenges, there's so much potential there. That's a fantastic opportunity for someone that is looking for a way to really make a difference, you know, and to not only improve things like access for people, but to really make a difference in the safety of our communities.
I can't agree more. As you were talking, I was thinking about a young, you know, very bright boy or girl working through K-12, going into college, and looking at the world that they're in. If they had enough exposure to ITS and its potential, they could look at our entire country, the entire landscape, the rural, the urban, the suburban, the exurban, all of it, and look at it like an ethical hacker and think, I think I can see some much faster ways to get from point A to point B. I can find some ways to do this safer, faster, cleaner. It's an opportunity to rebuild the country. It's really quite an inspired one. The other thing you made me think about, Stephanie, is that there is so much data out there historic that we've just got in the books. There's always the tragic death stats, to be blunt about it. We can learn from that. But with ITS, we also have microsensors and cameras. We can study all of the near misses. And then we can micro-simulate that. And then we can implement ITS systems to protect against all kinds of variables that we're not even studying to the extent that we should yet as a country. Kevin, in working, I know you worked out in California, you're out in Chattanooga now. When you think of, you know, what brings meaning to what you do, what comes to mind?
Well, in any local government, any governmental agency, you primarily have three key things that the citizens find of interest: public safety, traffic management is one, and accessibility to the system. Those are always key performance metrics that any mayor or council will want to try to address during their tenure in office. You know, as the implementers of how most of that manifests itself out in the real world. The things that we've been doing and kind of looking at some of the problems that are out there, as Stephanie alluded to with big data, we are utilizing our data to kind of make these maps of where we have problems and hotspots around the community so that we can apply some sort of treatment towards those types of things. One of the hard realities in my world is that pedestrian crashes only represent less than 1% of total crashes in our ecosystem out there, but they represent more than 17% of the fatalities of crashes. So that's 23 times more people are killed as a pedestrian than in a motor vehicle accidents than other mobility platforms. That resonates. That resonates strongly in our community because it's one of our charges is to perform public safety to some degree. So the implementation of the systems that we have out there, many of the systems that you had mentioned with utilization of sensors and different types of sensors and aggregating the data from those things to be able to project some near miss activities where problems are so that we can either direct enforcement or direct an enhancement or an engineering solution to a signal or a location become much more in focus with what we're trying to accomplish to lower those numbers. We see a lot of problems in communities where they're less advantageous in the mode choices that they have. We're trying to work towards those goals and objectives. Transportation is a very big and complex problem. And, in some instances, as I've said before, that the smart solution in transportation isn't always technology. It could be something as simple as concrete, putting in a sidewalk someplace. Those kinds of things are the real genesis of how the city is trying to look at these problems and address them.
When you think about planning for a future outcome for implementing a particular traffic or transportation system, first you look and see if you have new build as an option. In a lot of cases, you don't. And that's one of the big challenges I think that we see all over the world, quite frankly, as our populations increase. What intrigues me, from a meta perspective with ITS and the ways that we can work with data, the way we can use GIS and geospatial thinking is how do we find new avenues for mobility? How do we find new ways to move things around? It also looks like we're going to be seeing more and more last mile delivery innovations. We're going to see a lot more bots. My feeling is I've been to some of these future city symposiums. I lean toward more the R2-D2 delivery vehicle. If we see a bunch of 3 CPOs walking around, it's going to freak people out. That's all fun stuff to think about with transformational technologies, and it's all very exciting. I want to get to the workforce solutions that relate to these technologies, but where do we see the biggest challenges to implementation for new ITS solutions? If we can improve traffic, if we can do some of these really sophisticated implementations of sensors and cameras, from a policy standpoint, from a technological standpoint, working through city, county, state, and federal governments, where do the challenges lie? Stephanie?
I think, as Eric mentioned earlier, policy is going to be one of the really key aspects for this. Because when you think about technologies and particularly new innovations, you can think of so many examples, like rideshare services, for example. Before those services existed, we didn't think about how we would have to develop policies around them because they weren't there. And so then when these new technologies or new services or ways of traveling emerge, now you've got this whole new realm that you've got to start thinking about in terms of how do you adapt to that in the environment that you're in. And, another good example is truck platooning. So the technology for that came about. There were great opportunities for savings in terms of efficiencies, as well as reducing environmental pollution and all of these great things. But when it first came out, it was illegal to actually do because the trucks had to be too close together. And so you had to have policy adaptations just to even allow it to be piloted. So, it's all those kinds of things that I think are going to continue to be the challenge, including things like, what are the ethical ways that we use all this data that we're talking about?
Kevin, you mentioned working in city government. One of the challenges is how slow everything moves. Could you unpack that a little bit?
City government, any government at any level is process driven. We are faced with a challenge. We have to invent a process to address that challenge. and then implement policies based on what that process provides as the result and answer, and to be able to move forward on things, enacting ordinances or regulations or laws that govern certain pieces of what is done out there. And we have to think through every aspect and how it fits within our current ecosystem and how it may impact futuristic issues that we may, you know, maybe we haven't even thought of yet. Those are some of the bigger challenges. What I'm also seeing, because I've worked at state level and local level, the differences in from the trickle down from US DOT level down to the states and then down to the local agencies isn't always concise and equal. We look for guidance a lot of times from those entities, and they're not necessarily in a position to provide it yet because they themselves haven't figured it out yet. There's those challenges, and getting 535 congressmen and senators on board for something is not always an easy challenge.
Absolutely.
You know, so those are the realities of things that we have to face. It makes it difficult.
That's a really great context for me to paint the following picture with words. When the United States does it right, I think it, as a country, it does it better than just about any country, and that's civic market innovation. So we look at the cell phone. It was an abstract idea in the 70s. It weighed more than a cinder block and cost millions of dollars. But when that trifecta of a civic market comes together and you've managed to get leaders in government to work through that long, lengthy process that you're talking about and have some kind of visioning, like we saw with the cell phone, like we saw with the digital TV transition, moving from spectrums, coordinating with original equipment manufacturers and bringing together this great trifecta of research and development, industry, and government. We see the implementations work. And I think part of where you get the breakthrough, just as you were talking, Kevin, is when there's enough mainstream understanding, when enough citizens understand, hey, I want that. That's my expectation now. I think that's when there's the right kind of civic market leverage to get governmental leaders moving in pace with industry. And then research and development benefits because these products get commercialized, price point goes down, and we can implement them. When you think about all of the various projects that you've overseen across the country, Eric, where do you jump in on this conversation?
Stephanie did a great job of expanding on the policy one. So I'll give you two other ones, one short one, and then one maybe a different thought. First one is building on what Kevin said, and that is, we've got to modernize procurement laws in this country. We've got to promote a different way of promoting ethical behavior while still giving public agencies the ability to procure things that are 21st century related. So that's number one. That's the short one. On the other side of it is, and this speaks to foreshadowing where we'll go on workforce here, but we've got to understand that the power we have is in diversity and in different types of professionals we bring together to solve the problem. Here at Gannett, we recently reorganized to bring our smart communities and connected automated vehicle and technology people together with our urban planners, our community planners, and our transportation planners. Even beyond that, understanding the role that data plays and the role that community and development plays and integration with things that residents really care about, that's what's critical. So the barriers are us and our ability to come together as an industry and bring in new ideas that are diverse from the way we've all been trained in engineering and planning schools across the country to find new solutions to old problems.
There's no better jumping off point than that, new solutions to old problems. We are looking at a future that will change faster than it ever has before. And we've already experienced more exponential change than ever in the course of human history over the last 15, 20 years. With the very real reality that the demands, the skills gaps created, the need for new abilities, new KSAs, knowledge, skills, abilities is changing so quickly, it appears to me that it's unfair to expect traditional academia to keep pace. I don't even know that that's what traditional academia should do. What is clear is that there's a need for some kind of workforce development bridge to provide a means for emerging professionals and incumbents to get into this exciting field, to upskill, to do what they need to do. It also appears, you know, working in this research area for some time, that not all ITS jobs require a master's degree. A lot of this, when we look at the future and the opportunities, is a future of what is now called middle skills, STEM middle skills opportunities, I think could be very lucrative for a lot of emerging professionals in the future. How do we provide that bridge? During the last industrial revolution, the solution was apprenticeships. It seems to me that there's an opportunity with some new form of that now. If you had an opportunity to provide a quick punch list on what an apprenticeship like that should look like to prepare future ITS professionals, what would you put on your punch list? Kevin?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm not a master's degreed individual. I come from a plethora of different experiences that have given me the experience and education that I have up to this point. So I kind of understand where you're coming from. And I think that that has helped develop my more entrepreneurial approach to things. But what I've kind of been doing is learning a lot from, like you had indicated earlier, the Internet of Things, cell phone technologies, how that was approached and how local government agencies can kind of look at these things as these very systemic, small scale projects that they do to help develop not only the technology, but we're developing our staff at the same time. As they're being able to implement these things, they're beginning to understand the full value of how to go about doing the implementation, as well as the benefit of the data and information coming back out of it. They're learning quicker means and more enhanced viewpoints. They're actually starting to offer some suggestions on how we could tweak something here or there to get a better performance out of the technology that we're deploying. It is very much OJT from our world because, as I've indicated before, there's not just a good class that we can send anybody to that will teach them everything they need to know. There's a plethora of different organizations out there that offer training in many, many areas that we take advantage of as we can through trade organizations, through the local assistance programs that the federal government provides to each state, and classes that we can pick up through other mechanisms like Consortium for ITE, or CITE is the acronym.
What you're describing, Kevin, is you've been cobbling together something as you've gone, trying to fill a void that hasn't been there. So there's a lot we can learn from that. What you said, develop your tech and staff at the same time, is right on the money. That's a great, really, way to encapsulate it. Eric, when you think of your punch list, do you see the same real-time realities Kevin is explaining? And if you were to forward on to a policy leader, a punch list for an ITS apprenticeship program, what would you put on there?
I see a lot of what Kevin sees, certainly Tyler, and I've been colleagues over the years and have approached things in a similar way. I tell a good story to people that I mentor and classes that I speak to that I'm very proud of my Penn State engineering degree. No offense to University of Memphis and California State, but I think the best thing I got from my engineering degree at Penn State was logic skills, because that's really what it's about. It's about problem solving. It's a two-prong approach. I think that on the academic side, the issue I see with most postgraduate degree programs out there is that they take you from being a generalist and they turn you into a specialist within the discipline. And the problem with that is that our problems aren't getting more narrow, they're getting more broad. We're not training in postgraduate programs people that are ready to come out and face broad problems. They're ready to come in and be one provider to a larger solution set. The second part, I really believe that apprenticeships are crucial, because if you look at the major professions that have existed since the beginning of our country, legal, medical, engineering, and others, engineering is the only profession that's allowed the institutionalization of apprenticeship and formal mentorship programs to go by the wayside, because we've pushed our industry from both sides, public and private sector, into a commodity-based service model. And that is not what the public needs. It's not what they're looking for. They're looking for people who are creative problem solvers with good logic skills that can come in and lead and put out a plan, that a simple plan that people can follow. So in my punch list that I would give the policymakers, bring people in, make it part of the cost structure that you support apprenticeships and mentorship programs in the engineering industry. Again, not siloed to either public or private sector, but make it an industry standard that this exists. Two, focus on broad exposure to many different aspects of what the company or the agency does, so that we are producing professionals that have the ability to speak broadly and figure things out. Three, focus on giving people the tools necessary. I'm talking about soft skills to walk into the room, lead a conversation, and put out a simple plan that people can get on board with and follow. And fourth, and this is probably the most important, as engineers, we are trained to believe we're the smartest person in every room we walk into. So my challenge is the fourth leg of this stool is to produce people that understand that they do not solely possess the singular answer to any problem, and that they are part of a network or integrated system of problem solvers charged with improving the communities we serve.
Well said. I can't agree more. The moment is, I would say, very hungry for the ability to provide logical, data-driven storytelling. And by that, I mean the ability to provide future scenario planning in a way that helps generalists, not people in the weeds, think, yeah, if you could make it so that, as Kevin said, pedestrian fatalities aren't 23 times as bad as everything else, that would be a good thing. If you could ensure that my child can walk to school, that would be a good thing. If we could use data to ensure that baby formula can be moved around the country at a quicker rate with the current supply chain run we're looking at, all of that would be great. And I think that there are ways to tell some fascinating stories that aren't magical thinking. They're based on actual evidence. And that, to me, is when you get that kind of mainstream awareness, that's when you get the policymakers moving. That's when you get governmental leaders realizing that their own political futures are tied to delivering progress in a given area. And then you see industry doing what it does best with those kinds of innovations. Eric.
I couldn't agree with what you're saying more. And just to pick up on your metaphor from earlier, you're a R2-D2 guy, not a C-3PO person. What we don't want to become is the Darth Vader in this equation.
Yeah, and that's a very good point. And something that I'm working on personally with research here in Long Beach is ensuring that in the process of using microsensors and cameras in the spirit of making things safer and communities more equitable, we need to have protections in place to ensure that data is not used in ways that violate civil liberties, individual privacy. That's a wonderful way to extend the metaphor. I think that that's something we can bring into the curriculum in the classroom. I think students can read 1984 and then look at an engineering problem. Let's cultivate a more transdisciplinary way of looking at these things. I think the way to cut across silos is to say your number one priority is to solve this problem. And if you need to cut across the social sciences, the life sciences, and the humanities to do it, do it. I'm going to let you close things off, Stephanie, since I think you're qualified to do that, given that you are in a position to direct curriculum, you lead a workforce center. How do we recruit and inspire the next generation, men and women, to focus on ITS to do some of the exciting things we've been talking about this morning?
We've been talking about apprenticeships, and I think the really core element of that is it's industry and academic partnership. And I think that's really what has to happen. You know, from our perspective, we have started an apprenticeship program here, and it's specifically focused on transformational technologies. The reasons behind that were exactly as you mentioned earlier, Tyler. You know, it was trying to figure out how do we address all of these rapid evolutions that we're not really able to keep up the pace with. So how do we bring in the industry context to that? But it's also how do we help students find their fit. Because for students to be able to really understand what they like and what they might want to do, you know, they have to have broader experiences than what they are typically getting. And then I think the other thing is, to Eric's point about the need to really understand things from a much broader perspective. And that's one of the things that we focus heavily on, in that is that it's understanding things from as many different disciplinary perspectives as you can. And it's working with real interdisciplinary teams, and it's bringing together students from all different areas of the university to start thinking about these problems. And through that, they start to develop those skills that Eric was talking about that are so critical, but they also are able to see how they fit in and how they're part of that team and that ecosystem that becomes, that problem-solving engine. So I think it's helping students understand the context in which they can work. It's helping them see that they can add value, and it's helping them learn to respect the contributions from other areas. That's really the critical aspect to all of this.
Again, I can't agree more. I'm not surprised. I knew that I would enjoy talking with the three of you today. I think that if we could bottle the shared passion and enthusiasm that we have for ITS and just spread that around, I think that a lot more city leaders would choose ITS as a technological solution, and a whole lot more young people and people currently in the workforce would begin to look to ITS careers to improve our communities and just fully embrace this data-driven future that we know we're in. We just need to figure out what to do with it.
Thank you for joining me for this episode of Mobility Matters. As Internet of Things technologies redefine communities across the nation, digital rights are increasingly being viewed as an extension of human rights. It is therefore incumbent on leaders in ITS deployment in governmental, industry, and public sector spheres to find ways to implement these innovative new technologies that do not undermine basic civil liberties. Stay tuned for upcoming episodes focused on ways that ITS technologies can redefine communities across the country in a way that preserves these essential digital rights. This episode of Mobility Matters was brought to you by the Pacific Southwest Region University Transportation Center.
Additional episodes of Mobility Matters are available on iHeartRadio, Spotify, Audible, Amazon Music, and at nntw.org/mobilitymatters.